This recording is a production of Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2015 in Withville, Virginia, March 6 through 7.
Coping with reactive attachment disorder. I realize in a subject like this, there's differences of opinion. We get into labeling people. Is it right to label people? Sometimes people are labeled and then they treat for the label instead of what they really see, what the children really are. As I studied for this, prepared for this, I wish I would have had the information I have now before we started with our children. We adopted two. One we adopted from Guatemala. She came to live with us when she was 10. And she's now 21. And we adopted a boy who was 5 when he came to live with us, and he is now 17. And we were not prepared for the issues that would come up. And it doesn't have to be fostering adoption. There are other reasons and ways that this can show up. I was sharing with my wife. I got her to read my notes before I printed them off, and her comment was, "I wish we could do it over, because we know so much more about RAD than we knew then, and we still have a lot to learn." I don't profess to know it all, and if you have insights or anything, I'd be glad to hear from you as well. You have a handout there. I'd like to follow it as much as we can. One thing about it, and this, some of my thoughts come from this book, When Love Is Not Enough by Nancy Thomas. It's not really from a biblical perspective, but there's a lot of very good things in here. But in that, on the cover is a teddy bear with a knife laying there with its arm cut off. And that picture says a lot, because these children that we work with are really brokenhearted. And I believe that he has sent us to help heal that, to help heal the brokenhearted. I believe that, and you'll see at the end of the last page, I really believe that we are in a position to help with work with people like this. I got some of my information from here. There's a website that I cite at the end, and I'm also be sharing from some experiences. What is it? Well, if you look at attachment, attachment is the tie, the affectional tie between two people. We often think of it as between a parent and a child. And if you see there, I also have bonding between mother and child. And that is very important, the bonding between, sometimes they call it the primary caregiver or the mother and the child. There must be a bond there. And from that bond is how they view life and how life is, how they learn to handle life. So that's very important. Attachment disorder is when individuals have difficulty forming lasting relationships. Sometimes they show a complete lack of being genuine or showing affection to others. You wonder how some children just don't, you can't hardly get close to. Why is that? Fail to develop a conscience. How can someone just continually do something? How can someone, a child, stand there and lie to you when you know he's lying and he or she knows that they're lying? Or other things, and you've taught and you've tried, and it's still like there's no conscience. Don't trust. Without a bond, there's very little trust. And when a child fails to bond with his mother, he will have problems bonding with anyone. We're going to look look why this happens, but there is a link, I believe, between women going to the workplace and leaving their children in daycare and some of these things. Because that bond must, the first year is so important. And our son was 5 when he came to live with us. There is so much history in 5 years. There is so much that must be redone or changed or healed that happens in those first 5 years. I know I work at a hardware store, and a lady came in, I believe it was this week, and I knew she had twins years ago. And I said, am I right? Didn't you have twins? Yeah, she said, our twins are 31 now. I said, well, I just had a daughter that had twins. And so we got to talking about that. She said, is she a stay-at-home mom? I'm like, what else would she do? They're, 6, 7 weeks old, and that's all she does. That's all she gets done. If she'd take them to a babysitter and go to work, there would be difficult bonding. I'll just say it that way. A rad child does not think or feel like a normal child. I'm not saying they're not a normal child, but they don't think or feel like one. That's one of the burdens I have for our schools. Is that, and I was a teacher, and I understand what it's like to have students who get things well. You teach the lesson and they get it, okay? And it's nice to teach that way. Then you have one that hardly gets it, and you have to spend time with it. And how do you look at that? Is that an opportunity or is that a frustration? If it's a frustration, they'll know it right away. And some of the frustration, at least in our experiences, we didn't know how to bridge that connection, make that connection. We didn't know how to work with that. And we got frustrated. And if we're frustrated, they are. Deep-seated rage that comes from unfulfilled needs as an infant. And I'll get into some of that later. Extreme pain is locked in his heart because of abandonment. And one of the things that goes with being abandoning as in the primary caregiver or the mother is separated. One of that is pain locked in there that they don't know how to express. And it's been pushed down for years because it's too painful to talk about. Our son went to Bald Eagle Boys Camp, spent 2 years there, and one of the things that he had to do, and he knew to graduate he had to do, was talk about how he felt. And he told me, I don't want to do it. It hurts too much. He finally improved in that. It's still hard, but it's too painful to go there. That's the way they survive. Inability to love. How can you snuggle and cuddle someone and an hour later they say they're going to kill you? How is that possible? Feels burdened with guilt. Feels it's his fault. It's his fault he is the way he is or she is. They think that they're to blame. He cannot enter relationships, so treatment and education is extremely difficult. There's a story in one of the books I looked into. What would you think if you would be a man sitting at a restaurant and this lady comes out with her mop and her rubber gloves and tells you to clean the bathroom? And you'd say, what's your problem? Yes, if you don't clean the bathroom, I'm going to take it off your allowance. You say, no, wait a minute. This doesn't even make sense. This cleaning lady's coming to me. I'm a customer here. Well, there's no relationship there. If that would be my mother, if that would be my daughter or someone, I'd probably go do it because there's a relationship there. But when there's no relationship, it's hard to, especially a child, it's hard to make them listen. It's hard to teach them. So there needs to be a relationship. And the thing is, it's hard to develop a relationship because of all the baggage. So reactive attachment disorder, or RAD, failure to bond because of childhood trauma. The child reacts to attempts to facilitate attachment, often reacting violently to those who love them most. You often heard bites the hands that feed them. That's what happens. And we'll get into that a little bit later. The next page is causes. And some of these I can identify with, others I can't hardly. But one thing I am sure of is that the environment of a child from conception to the first birthday will determine basically the way that child goes, unless there's tremendous intervention. There is stress in the womb. Drug and alcohol exposure, Brother Jonas mentioned that. That does something. That does something to the system. I'm not going to go into that. Maternal stress. When there's crisis in the home and in the family before that child's born can cause it. An unwanted pregnancy. I know a case in Guatemala where a single mother became pregnant, and she didn't want the child, and so she took medicine and stuff trying to abort it. That does something to that child before it's even born. And then stress during the first 3 years of life, physical, emotional, and sexual abuse. I just heard recently of a situation, it might have been in the newspaper, where the man was sentenced, but or at least found guilty, that it was a small child, like a couple months old. I'm not exactly sure how old it was. And he shook that baby until, God has the shaken baby syndrome. It'll never be normal. How do you do that? Some of these children have been thrown up against the wall. Sexual abuse, I don't understand that. But it happens. It's very real to many people. And then neglect. One of the stories I read preparing for this was a lady would feed her baby, put her to bed, and then go out to the bars for the night. And sometimes even bring men home. And the baby learned to just be quiet. And the mother thought it was a good baby. But it was just tremendously neglected. Sudden separation from primary caregiver, illness or death of the mother, severe illness or hospitalization of a child. I can remember whenever we got some training to become foster parents, they told us about some of this stuff, and it was just in the, like they say in Spanish, en las nubes. It was just in the clouds. Okay, it wasn't real. But somebody, a child that, for example, is premature and spends 3 months in the hospital is a prime candidate for this. It doesn't have to be. But that attachment does not develop like it should. Abandoned, real or imagined. Sometimes a mother passes away. Our daughter was born, and her mother kept her for 2 months. And then she couldn't take care of her, so she passed her off to her aunt. Her aunt had her for 8 months. And then we had her for 6 months in Guatemala. And they told us that we have to go back to the States and do some paperwork. So we left her with another missionary family, came back to the States. We're here 10 months, went back, and took her back in and kept her till she was adopted. But she had the abandonment from her mother, from the aunt, from us, from the other missionary family. She had four times. And you'll often see they don't want to be left behind. They're always afraid of being left behind. They're afraid of being forgotten. That's comes from that. Inadequate daycare or change in a daycare provider. Undiagnosed or painful illness, ear infections, colic, etc. When a child is under a lot of pain in the first year of life, it can cause that. Their needs are not being met. Chronic maternal depression. We were, just not long ago, we were visiting our daughter. And, I mean, I held my grandson. And I held my granddaughter, and I just held him and looked at him. And to me, why would I? Yeah, I talked to him a little bit, but I didn't go, all that kind of stuff, okay? But that's important from a mother. That is very important. You don't just go through the mechanics of taking care of the child. There's a motherly thing that happens, and it's very necessary to avoid that. If that doesn't happen, the mother is depressed, the mother has other things going on, doesn't take time to do that, can cause it. Several moves or placements, foster care, failed adoption, step-parent, can cause that. Our son was 5 when he came to live with us. He came in July, and he was taken from his birth family in January. And we were the 6th home he was in. And they just come, one day pack him up and haul him off to the next place. And I remember the day he came, he was around there, and finally they got him convinced to come in. Okay, and they started to show him the room he's going to be sleeping in. He ran to the van, jumped in the van, locked the door. He was not going to a new place. Well, then my daughters got him convinced, let's go feed the sheep. And so he come out. While they were going feeding the sheep, the 2 social workers jumped in the van and left. And there he is with two garbage bags of stuff, and he's planted, put right in there. And that happened 6 times, or 5. Those kind of things can cause it. Unprepared mothers with poor parenting skills or lack of support. Sometimes a mother's just overwhelmed with all they have to do, and they don't have the support, the time to reach around. I'd just like to touch on a couple things here with this. I don't have it in the handout. But things that can help children like this and things that can contribute to that. Maybe it's not as severe, but one of the things is feeding, the way feeding is done with an infant. Now, I'm no mother, and some of you mothers and grandmothers can say, you're crazy. But this is the way I understand it. The best thing to do is hold the baby close and feed it, whether nursing or by the bottle. Don't lay the baby down and prop the bottle. That shouldn't be done. Carrying, the way to carry. I tremble whenever, and I know why it's done, because of car seats and so forth. But whenever a child is carried into church in a carry, what do you call them? Bassinet or whatever, and you can put them right in the vehicle and strap it in, that child should be held like this as much as possible with their face towards your face. Touch, it's very important that they don't just lay somewhere, but there's somebody touching them many times. One of the things they told us when we started adopting or started fostering, and it says it in here, it says no TV for 1 year. Isn't that good for all the time? But then we have other things too. We have videos, we have internet, we have that. I think we need to be careful with that. And the way holding is done, the way we fuss over them. Under C there, these situations can cause the child to shut down and not develop the ability to trust, love, or care. The child becomes very controlling so that they can feel safe, so no one hurts them. They learn to control and manipulate developing little or no consciences. Before I go on, I'd like to open it up. Does anyone have a question or something to add to the first things there, first two sections? Yes. I can't say that I really had to the point that we work with our own children. I've seen signs of it, but it was not so severe that we couldn't work with it. Has anyone else in your school or? I'd like to get to some of that at the end. But I can only talk from my experience, not from the other students. Anyone else? Okay, let's go to symptoms. And Dr. Walter Boehning, this is the list he gave. And as I read down, I looked this up, and I began to read down over it. And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Almost every one of these is things that we experienced. Is unable to give or receive love. That's a symptom of it. You can try it. You can. And some of this thing is you give your whole self to it, to pour yourself into this child, and he. Well. We had our son about 2 weeks, and we were having a minister's meeting at our house. And all of a sudden, he came running in the door with a rock and threw the rock and hit me in the side of the head. He was starting to bond a little bit. I was now his father figure, and now these ministers were in here taking my time. And it happened, not that thing, but that kind of thing happened many times. Is oppositional, argumentative, and defiant. Is emotionally phony, hollow, or empty. I remember one of our caseworkers came and was talking, and our son went to her and said, "I love you." And she said, "You like me." She was new to him, but she said, "He said I love you." He didn't understand what that was. Is manipulative or controlling. That is a big thing, control. Because of suffering some kind of neglect or abandonment, in order to that not happen again, they control the situation. And they'll do sometimes wild things to control the situation so people leave them alone. Don't touch them. Controlling. We'll get into that a little bit later. Has frequent or intense angry outbursts. And my experience, our experience with this one is often when something is, there's a trigger and there's an outburst, that is not the problem. Something has been happening or has happened that he's been bottling up. And it's just enough to set him off. There was a situation at camp with our son. I hope you understand. I can only speak from experience, so that's why I share about my son. He's getting help. He has not given his heart to the Lord yet, and we've come a long ways, but we feel we have a ways to go. But he lost it at camp one night, and what happened was he bought something at Trading Post, and he wanted to keep it by his bed in the tent. And the chiefs and the other campers said, "No, you must keep this." They have like another tent where they do crafts and stuff, and that's where you keep everything that you don't need to sleep. okay, or to get dressed. So it was supposed to be there. Well, he lost it. They had like a four-hour session. And, yeah, I can understand that. He's always been protected. He feels people have violated him, and it's his, so he should have it. But there's something beyond that. So when he was home, often we'd had to think for him, give him suggestions. But I don't exactly know how it came out, but my uncle had passed away a couple weeks before that, and he was not able to come home for the funeral. And that was the problem. But he held that down until all of a sudden here was something that just put him over the edge. That was classic in our experience. He is an angry child inside. He feels the world is against him. He feels like his rights are violated. Next page, unable to cry about something sad. I would also say with that, unable to express pain. Some of those children can hurt pretty badly before they express that they hurt. So that's been a real challenge in both of our children when they were small to figure out exactly what's wrong with them, why they're sick, because they wouldn't express pain. Didn't know where it hurt. They knew they hurt, but didn't know where. Avoids or resists physical closeness and touch. Cannot be trusted. They're often very sneaky. Has little or no conscience. Is superficially engaging or charming. Lack of eye contact on parental terms. This is a big one. And we knew that Wayne was making progress at camp when he could sit down and talk to us and look us in the eye. He could never do that. And when we began to work with our children, I began to see other students in school. I began to see adults. You ever come to somebody and you talk to them, but they're never looking at you? They can't look you at? What's wrong? You see these, there's something there. Why can't we look eye to eye and have eye contact? Indiscriminate affection with strangers. Not affection on the parents' terms. Destructive through self, others, and property. We had a lot of broken things and smashed things. One of the things was these right here. We had more glasses broken in a moment. Those glasses were gone. Whenever we began to have an incident where we had to restrain them, our family would come together and just grab the glasses so we could handle the situation. Teachers had broken glasses. More disobedient toward mom than dad. And this is, I really feel for mothers. Because mother can be at home all day working with this child. And it's a terror. And dad comes home and things straighten out. And dad says, that's a big a deal. If you'd been here, you'd know different. We're going to get into that a little bit later, but I'm going to leave that till the end there. Cruel to animals. Some are, not all are. We find out that when they get angry, that can happen. Steals. We had a terrible problem with that when Wayne first came, and he was so slick at it. And so we would get him he'd go to the store and he'd stick stuff in his pocket. We'd find that we'd make them go back and do something for them. Sweep the floor, clean something, do work for them for stealing. I'm not saying he never steals, but it has gotten tremendously better. We haven't had a big issue with that for many years. Lies about the obvious. I mean, you know it's wrong, and they know it's wrong, but they continue to lie. Is impulsive or hyperactive. Lacks cause and effect thinking. I'm going to move to Texas and have a big ranch. Well, how are you going to pay for it? Well, somehow it'll work out, you know. Or doesn't think through things. Gorges or hoards food. Has poor peer relationships. preoccupation with fire, blood, or violence. And one of the things we found that, and it's documented, is that a child who has been sexually abused has a fascination with fire. I don't know why that. Lights, fires. I was back in the bathroom getting ready. This happened a number of years ago. And I come out, and there's burnt paper all over the kitchen floor. And here, he was burning paper. Persistent nonsense questions or instant chatter. Sometimes you just have to say, okay, now, what is it? What is truth? He keeps asking me, what is truth? And he has to tell me the answer. Sexual acting out, bossy with peers. You have, in a normal family, I think, in a normal family, you have competition and you have some children are bossy with other children, if that's the way it was when I grew up. You get a couple of these children together, it's multiplied. Some thoughts there at the bottom. The child is often angry at mother, primary caregiver. This anger is often directed at the one taking mom's place. I know one of the things we could not figure out why. What did my wife do to cause so much anger from them? And then we read this, that this is what it is. And we got to talking to them, and they admitted it. They don't know why. They don't really mean it. If you talk to them now, they're older, and you can talk to them, and they understand it. But you are taking my mother's place. And it's hard to get a hold of. The child feels bad, thinks he is bad, will prove he is bad. When complimented, he will prove he is bad. They are unable to express feelings because they buried their feelings long ago. It hurts too much to consider feelings. They understand anger, kindness hurts. Any questions or thoughts? How many of you have dealt with rad children? A couple. How many have dealt with rad children, have worked with them? That's what I said. I wish I'd have known all this when we started. And as I went down these lists, this is exactly like, yeah, go ahead. You mean, did he not want to go? We had talked about it for a while, and he knew he needed help. And it was not easy, but we didn't have to push him too hard. We went and visited. We talked about it. He knew he needed help. But it got hard as the time went on. It got hard to take him back. he wanted to be home. Yes, Jonas. Not without special help. Not special help, with additional help. I think it's possible. Our educational process with Wayne was that he went to, and some of this was, he was foster child till he was 13, and then we finally could adopt him. But and this is very typical. He came to us in July. It was January till the paper was worked through that he could go to kindergarten. It was supposed to be the year he went to kindergarten. Well, because he only got half a year and his learning level, they said he should repeat that. He still talks about that. I should be in such and such a grade. And so for a while, he blamed us for it because we held him back. We said, no, we had no control over that. So then after that, we saw what was going on in public school, and we asked permission. We got permission to put him in our school for first grade. Well, at about Christmas time, just before Christmas, he started to tear up his CLE light units, the math book. He'd be sitting in class and just tear the math book up. Well, in our minds, he's a bad child. He just did something bad. The real issue was he didn't understand it. And he didn't know how to express, I don't understand this. And so he tore it up. And we worked with that till about February. And finally, I was principal of the school. And we had one teacher for each classroom. And it just wasn't enough. And the first grade teacher would bring him down and says, and I tried to work with him. And finally, we just said, this can't go. So he went back to public school. And in public school, they did not push him as much as I wish they would have, but they always had two teachers in the group he was in. And he'll tell you, he was in the dumb group. You have different levels in public school. You're labeled, he is in the dumb group. Well, I told him he's the smartest one in the dumb group. But he was there, and there'd be another teacher, and when they would sense that he was not getting something, they were right there to help him. And it actually went much better academically in public school. But our experience was that whenever you have a sponge and you dip it into sewer water, and you have a sponge and you dip it into pure water, whatever you dip it into, it's going to soak up. And that's what was happening to him. And he went to camp, and when he came back, we put him back in our school. It's not a perfect situation. There's still not enough help. But it's better than it was. But I don't think you could put him in a regular classroom, especially the way we push our children to go on to the next level. Maybe in an individualized, it would work if you had a tutor there. But in a classroom setting where you got to do this, and then next day do the next year do the next grade, I don't think it would work. Does anyone have anything else to add to that? That would be my experience. Okay, let's go on to coping with RAD. When I first got the title, it was dealing with RAD. When I got the program, it was coping with RAD. And so I looked up the word cope. And Webster says, to fight or contend with successfully or on equal terms, to deal with problems or troubles. So I guess we're about the same, coping and dealing. We're working with it. We are looking at it in a sense of school, but I think it needs to primarily be done at home. It takes everyone working together to make progress. And I think it's very important that we have family support, that the family's supporting, that there's church support and school support. I am so blessed that our school board and our high school teacher brought Wayne back into school. He's not on the academic level, but they have him there. It's not perfect, but it's a blessing. They're going out of their way to help. He knows it. I don't think it always registers, but he knows it. But it needs to be working together. And I have some things here that I feel they're important. This is a big subject, but some things that when we're working with these need to happen. First thing is establish respect. Eye contact is so important. Whenever you talk to them, make sure they demand that they look at you. Okay? Look in your eyes, and you look in theirs. When they look away, tell them to look back. I still sometimes I tell Wayne, look at me, and he'll look at me. Before I couldn't hardly get him to do it. He does it now. Make eye contact. How you speak and what your eyes say is so important. Tone of voice. And we found that a tone of voice can make them shut down so they don't hear what you say. They only hear the voice. They only hear the tone of voice, and it shuts them down. And you can try to reason, but you can't because they've already shut down for that moment. You're in control. They need to know you're in control, and they like to feel safe. One time we had to take Wayne to a psychiatric hospital in Clarion, Pennsylvania, 3 hours away. We took him there and dropped him off. He was there 3 weeks, and then he was picked up by the county, taken to a boys' home, a group home, spent some time there. But you know what was the first question he asked the social worker when he picked him up and was taken to a new place? Will I be safe? That was the first question. They need to feel safe. So we are in control. Anger, hesitation, exasperation, raising your voice, and fear lets them know that they're in control. And hopefully I want to read a little story from this book. This girl, a testimony, tells exactly that. They want to be in control. But if they try to tip the scales. They try to pull your triggers. Then they're in control. If you demand respect, speak kindly. Another thing is speak clearly, speak kindly, choose words carefully. Practice and require good manners. The way we act to them. I know what it's like to come home at the end of the day and be dead tired. And here's a situation that we must work with yet tonight. And you're like, I know a Mennonite preacher, a non-resistant should never feel that way. But you get to that point, okay? Working with this. And it's day after day. But you have to realize, it has helped me to try to look at it from his perspective. And how he's felt. I mean, he had 5 years of garbage. Let me give you an instance. He had to be restrained a number of times. And we would often take him to his bedroom, and I would restrain him in his bedroom. He would go crazy. He would go crazy. The rest of the family would be there praying, and I'd be there holding him down. We found out that he was sexually abused. My wife could go into that bedroom alone with him, and there was no problem. But if I went in the bedroom alone with him, he went crazy. This was all coming back. Well, he got to the place after a couple years that he had no problem with me because I never did anything wrong to him. We used to get ready for church Sunday morning. We'd get him ready and set him on a chair. Okay, now you stay there till we get ready. Well, he was tearing around one Sunday morning, and I was getting ready. I put my pants and shirt on. I grabbed my belt to put my belt on while I'm dealing with him, and I come around the corner, and he saw me with the belt. He lost it. Why? Because he got beat with a belt. He had marks on his back from being beat with a belt. So if you get those kind of, if you realize those kind of things, it helps you with God's grace to not lose it. Establish trust. Always keep your word. These children have been lied to and lied to. Social workers will lie to them to make them do something. Wayne got picked up at 9 years old. He got picked up at the public school by a police officer because he ran away. So they called the police officer. He came, picked him up, and he was fighting. He actually kicked the wind out of the police car. And the police officer promised him, if you behave yourself and sit in the car, I won't put handcuffs on you, and I'll take you to McDonald's. He's now 17. He still talks about that. He never took me to McDonald's. He had no intention of taking him to McDonald's. But he was trying to get him to cooperate. And that's one of the things we say. Have we ever lied to you? It is so important that you're worthy, that you establish trust. Number C there, establish structure and provide nurture. Red children often experience healing more quickly when there is structure. Structure makes them feel safe. They know what's going to happen. At our school this year, I think we've had 14 two-hour delays. That drives him crazy. 8 o'clock in the morning, it's time to go to school. And he knows what's going to happen. Two-hour delay? 2 hours we give him things to do, but he's supposed to be at school. Structure is very important. And in a classroom that we like to put new things in. And that's okay once in a while. Maybe as a surprise or something. But if you're working with them, in a classroom setting, it must be structured to get results. And they'll buck it and different things, but they like it. Nurture must go along with structure. And I have written here in my notes, law and grace. Nurture and structure. Okay, establish goals. Manners, chores, schoolwork. Okay, we're going to do this. And once you accomplish this, we can do this. It must happen. Maybe in chores. If you do your chores correctly or schoolwork, do it neatly. And one of the things is writing neatly. I don't know if you require that in your schools anymore or not. But he may get frustrated that he has to go back and redo it, but he'll feel much better about himself if he brings a paper home that it's written neatly. That was one of the things they expressed in camp. He had to do that. He felt much better. It was amazing that the handwriting he could do. We had about every 4 months we'd have a evaluation at camp. And about the second or third visit for evaluation, he wouldn't look at anybody yet. And he bent over and he untied his one shoe and tied it and untied the other shoe and tied it back up. And he sat up and I said, "Wayne." He said, "What?" "You tied your shoe." He could never tie his shoe before he went to camp. We always tied his shoes because he could. Now, we tried teaching him. He couldn't learn. He knew how to all along. He got our attention. We took time with him. Give responsibility with accountability. Don't just tell them to go do something and never check up on them. That's bad. It must be accountability. Celebrate victories. When something good happens, celebrate it. But tell them, "Good job." Don't tell them, "You're a good boy because you did that." They will soon let you know they're not good. They will do something on purpose to prove that they're not good. It will happen. Either I have established good school support. Red children often need more guidance, more tutoring than other students. Communication between all parties involved is so important. Parents, teachers, school bus driver, etc. When Wayne was in public school, the teacher would write home every night how the day went. And we would write every morning in his journal, send it along with him, how the night went. Sometimes he was a terror at school and perfect at home. Sometimes it was the other way around. But see, they'll pit people against each other. And so you have them in your school, and the parents think everything's fine because they don't hear anything bad. But he might be a terror at school. But if we do lots of communication, everybody knows what's going on. And he knows that everybody knows what's going on. And he's not... I think they call that triangulation, where you get three people and tear it up. Okay, F. Establish methods of restitution. Actions have consequences. Help them feel these consequences. You know, there was something that happened at camp that I was glad that happened, but in a way I was sad. There was a couple guys ran away one night and broke into Chuck Wagon and stole some stuff. And then there was another group another night. Wayne was not involved. But he had a court hearing. One of these boys had a court hearing for another something that happened during home visit. When they took him to the court hearing, they put him in handcuffs and took him off. And he didn't come back. That spoke more to that group of boys than you could do for talking for a long time. Because they saw that what happens... consequences. So important. Okay, any more thoughts or questions? I'd like to read a story, short story in here, about a girl that's 15 years old, and this is her testimony. "When I had my first adopted mom, I was scared of her. I was scared of what she would think of me if I wasn't her perfect child. I was so scared that I figured instead of being the perfect child and trying to put on a flawless show, why should I? I might as well not try because I'm going to mess up anyway. Deep down, I wanted her to love me, but I also didn't. Because if she loved me, I wouldn't be able to take it. My birth mom loved me and then died, so why should I let this woman love me? When I know that if she does, she will probably just disappear or die also. No way was I going to let someone get close to me again. I pushed and pushed until she had no idea what was going on. To every other person, I was charming, adorable little child with big blue eyes. How could this child be disturbed? She's just a little girl. Yeah, just a little girl with a solid rock for a heart. Just a little girl with rage smoking from my ears. But no, that can't be. She's so sweet, and when she's with us, she's just fine. Oh yeah, I'm just fine because you are too blind to see what I can do to you. Yeah, I'm so shy and so angelic. What could ever be wrong at home? That's because you don't know how powerful I am. Look what I've done to you. I've made you feel sorry for me and want to shower me with affection. Oh, I'm so smart. Now don't you start to love me, or you too will get the power of my wrath. You too will know what I hide so well from the outside world. If you love me, I will die. No, no, no. Babysitters were no match for me. I was 5 years old, 30-pound terror. They would do anything to get me to shut up or calm down. Anything. I would lie and say my mommy and daddy hated me, that they didn't care. Then when sent to go to bed, I would howl and holler for my mommy. Of course I didn't care whether my mommy lived or died. Actually, I did care. I cared if she lived. I didn't want her to live. If she lived, I would die. I had to be powerful. I had to be the one in charge. To be in charge, I had to hide my fear of love. So I covered it with hate. I hated that my mom so much that she herself was scared of me. So scared that she looked for help. She couldn't take it anymore and I had won. Yes, I am strong. I am powerful. And no one, not anyone, can ever break the steel covering I have over my heart. No one can ever touch me again. I have succeeded. When I turned 6, I was even worse. I had pushed my mom and dad away. My little brother was terrified of me. I was a demonic queen. I knew for sure I was a witch. And I knew I have power to control all these people, to push everyone away and make no one like me. I was never lonely, and if I started to be, I'd quickly do something mean to make myself feel strong. Then they found help. But I believed it wasn't going to work. I could be the sweetest, most agreeable, and pleasant child. No one could stop me. Whoa, was I in for a shock. These people knew. These people could see right through me. Ah, this wasn't right. I can't work with these people. They know too much. Quick, I had to get out of here. No, don't you hold me. Let me go. No, no, no. You will never know what I am like down deep inside. I am a witch, a powerful demon. You can't stop me. Oh, it was painful. They were breaking down my walls of steel. They knew how scared and sad I was. No one else did. They knew how mad I was at my birth mom for dying. No one else did. They knew I blamed my little brother for killing my birth mom. No one else did. They held me and made me scream and tell things that I did not want to tell, but I did. They pried into my soul and made me talk about the sad and the scared and the mad. I didn't want to, but I did. They helped me be strong in a good way. I was powerful because I was in charge of no one but me. That made me powerful because I had power over myself. Before my emotions and mind just took over my body, I was actually turning into a happy child. I was learning that I could trust somebody, that they weren't going to die on me, and if they did, I was going to be okay. I was becoming a loving child. I actually could feel love. It was so scary at first. I didn't want to, but it felt so good. It was so soft and gentle and kind. I had never felt like this before. And now that I had, I could relax for once and let someone else take care of me. I could be just a little girl who loved myself and loved my mom and my dad and my little brother. I could just let it go. I didn't have to be a witch with strong powers. I didn't have to hate people and push them away. I could just be. So that's what I did, and here I am writing this for you to read at the age of 15 in a family who loves me dearly. I live in a new family because I pushed my other family away too long and too hard. So they decided to relinquish rights. I live in a family who helped me to live, who helped me to love. Please, I beg of you to understand how I felt and how your child feels. Please stay with them and love them along the way. The road will be long and rocky with so many potholes. Don't worry, it will become smooth once again. They one day will look into your eyes and tell you, thank you, I love you, like I did. The last part on the page 5 there. Concluding thoughts, red children can heal. Believe it. I believe they can heal. I believe there's hope. Some are very easily identified as red, others are not as much, but I believe there's hope. They need unconditional love. You're going to love them regardless of what happens. They are not dumb or stupid. They are wounded, angry, and hurting. They feel that they're dumb and stupid. Our son came, we could hardly understand him talk at 5 years old, but he could say 4-letter swear words, and he could say the word stupid as clear as could be. Why was that? Because that's what he was called. They survive by controlling their environment. And I believe Christian schools have the unique opportunity to minister to red children. I'm just going to say it's going to take extra time. It's going to take extra personnel. It's going to take a burden to do it. But I believe it can be done. We went to sign some papers one time at Luzerne County to take for Wayne. And the head of social services came to us, and she sat down with us, and she said, we need your people. She said, we have 500 in foster care. We need your people. Lord bless you.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders Educational Programs. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.